Get ready to listen, learn, and earn CE hours. This podcast features content from an accredited CE activity provided by Calibri Healthcare. Visit elitelearning.com/podcasts for accreditation and disclosure statements and instructions on how you may be able to earn CE credits.
This is Dr. Candace Pierce with Elite Learning by Calibri Healthcare, and you are listening to our Elite Learning podcast, where we share the most up-to-date education for healthcare professionals. Thank you for joining us for this podcast series topic about how we as nurses can use our voice in policy and advocacy at all levels of government. I'm really excited today to have Lieutenant Governor Sarah Rodriguez joining us for this topic. Sarah is currently the 46th Lieutenant Governor of Wisconsin, elected in 2022. But before that, you served in the Wisconsin State Assembly representing the 13th Assembly District, right?
Correct. Yes.
Yeah. So I can only imagine that you've been really busy, and I just want to thank you for taking time to share the knowledge that you've gained on your journey where you are using your expertise and have been and voice to impact so many people. And I want to focus on your path and what you've learned that will help another nurse who maybe sees themselves going on this journey. And then we're going to focus on kind of the background in your story of how you actually got into where you are. So I want to start with the why. Why did you decide to become involved in policy and advocacy in such a visible role?
Yeah, first of all, thank you so much for having me. I think it's fantastic that you're talking about policy and healthcare and specifically how nurses can be involved within policy, because it is really, really important.
Absolutely.
So many people ask me, you know, why did you start, or did you ever think you were going to be in politics? And the answer to that is no. I never thought that I was going to be in the policy arena. I never thought I was going to run for office. I have been in healthcare for all of my career. I've been a nurse for over 25 years, been working within different roles within healthcare, mostly public health nursing. And, you know, I decided to run for assembly first because it was right during COVID. And I was sitting at home and I was so frustrated. I was angry about the misinformation and the disinformation that was coming out of our legislature. And I wanted to be able to use my nursing voice, my public health background, to make a difference in Wisconsin. And so I ended up calling actually my local party, who I had been in contact with before, and said, hey, I want to help. How can I help? What can I do that might be different than I've been doing in the past? And they actually let me know that this particular seat in the assembly may be one that we could flip. And the current seat was a Republican seat. I'm a Democrat. And so it was possible to be able to flip that seat and really encourage me to think about it. And it took me a while. It took me a while to say, yes, I'm the right person to be able to do this. Yes, this is a way that I want to use my voice. And decided to run for assembly. And we won that seat. We did flip that seat with just a little over 1% of the vote. And so that was really exciting to be able to do that. Yeah. And so I ended up serving within the assembly for 2 years, was on the health committee there, other types of committees that I was able to use my nursing background and my nursing voice. And we had a redistricting within the state of Wisconsin, and my district really changed. And it was a very different district than I had run in the past. And I thought, well, maybe I'm done. Maybe this is it. This, just these 2 years. And then our lieutenant governor at the time decided to run for Senate, and his seat became open. And it was something that, again, I had to think about and say, hey, is this the way that I want to use my voice? Is this the microphone that I want for health policy? Had some conversations with friends, had some conversations with my husband and my family, and decided to run for lieutenant governor. And I'm very, very glad that I did. I am so honored to be in this spot and to be a nurse in this spot as well. You may or may not know, but I am the second nurse ever to be lieutenant governor across the country. And that's super exciting. Yeah,
that's really very exciting.
Yes. Yeah, the other one's in Delaware.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, so the other one's in Delaware, and she's now running for governor. And so when she wins, she will be the first nurse governor. Yes, she'll be the first nurse governor. And I think it's really an exciting way that we can use our background, our knowledge on really interesting and exciting policy initiatives.
Absolutely. So what prepared you, you think, the most for this role when you went in? Well, for any of the roles, when you went into the 13th Assembly District, but also as Lieutenant Governor, what do you feel really prepared you for that?
So what I have found the most interesting walking into this role is how much my nursing background has prepared me. Number one, we know what happens on the ground within healthcare systems. We know how important it is for people to have access to affordable healthcare. I had been an executive within healthcare systems, so I also understood kind of how the sausage is made on a broader level and what reimbursement looks like, all of these different types of things. And so that really prepared me to look at legislation in a different way, because sometimes there are policies that look really good on paper, but there are unintended consequences of those policies that we would need to make sure that we are fixing as we move forward. The other thing that I think prepares nurses really well to be in policy is that we are used to having difficult conversations. We are used to advocating for our patients, and these are high-stakes conversations that we have needed to have within hospital systems, at the bedside, with individuals who may not agree with us. And we can do it appropriately, professionally, and respectfully. And so that's the same skill set that you need within the policy arena. You need to be able to talk to people who may or may not agree with you and see if you can find some common ground to advocate for policies, to advocate for the people who you represent.
Yes, that's really good. And we do. We have conversations like this all the time at work, at the bedside, at the clinic. And you don't realize just how much of a skill that is that we have. So I love that you highlighted that. That's really good. Yeah. In your various roles professionally, because I saw where your focus has been on public health and population health management within your, professionally before you moved into these roles. So in both healthcare and politics, what key experiences have shaped your perspective on healthcare advocacy?
So when I started working within public health, this is pre-Affordable Care Act. So this was, prior to that being passed into legislation. And so when I was working, and I'll tell you one story, when I was working within a public health clinic, this was during a recession, pre-ACA, and this woman had lost her job. And she was offered COBRA, but she was an administrative assistant. And that amount for COBRA insurance coverage would have been more than she was really making. And it was absolutely unaffordable. And so she had to stop taking her heart medications. She had to stop taking her blood pressure medications. And she came to us basically having a heart attack. And we had to give her by ambulance to the hospital system, where she ended up having some procedures.
It was so heartbreaking.
And she was 62 years old. So she was just shy of Medicare. And this is a woman who worked every day of her life. She did what we tell everybody to do. You know, she made the compact with society. She was taking care of herself, and through no fault of her own, she was ended up being let go from this particular job without having access to healthcare at 65 for Medicare. So ended up having a procedure, had to declare bankruptcy to be able to, even pay for anything relative to her healthcare. And so I've seen what it looks like pre-Affordable Care Act. And I know that I don't want to go back there. I don't want to have those conversations with patients again where they don't have any options. And you may or may not know, in Wisconsin, we are now only one of 10 states that has not expanded Medicaid or Badger Care within the state of Wisconsin. And it can be heartbreaking, those conversations that we have to have with individuals out there when there is a solution to what would be able to cover them, and we're not implementing it here in Wisconsin. And that's really frustrating.
Yeah. And, those are conversations that, as nurses, we have them a lot nationwide. And we see them a lot. And it breaks our heart. There's nothing that we can do individually to help them.
Not individually. Yes.
Right. You are there individually.
Individually. Yes. And so I say this to nurses all the time. Like in my office, in my statewide office, the joke in my office, if a nurse calls, I'll take it, right? Because mm-hmm. it's really important to me to have impact within this office, within nursing overall. However, it is really challenging for me to meet with individuals. It's just too hard in a statewide right. office. But guess what who I can meet with? The Nurses Association, the Heart uh-huh. Association, the Lung Association. They are all working on policy. They are all trying to make sure that we have accessible healthcare within the state of Wisconsin. And so those are types of organizations that nurses can get involved with so that they can have their collective voice to be able right. to talk to their elected officials.
Right. And so I want to move a little bit towards our profession as a whole. So I'm gonna give you some statistics, and then I have a question for you at the end of the statistics, and I bet you're going to know what that is as I start to tell you. So I did a really quick search right before we met to record this, just because I was curious how many nurses have held a position in a state or federal level now. And I found some interesting statistics. So I'm going to share what those are. So I'm going to start at the federal level. Currently, and this is as of January of 2023, we had three nurses at the federal level. And I saw Congresswoman Lauren Underwood, Congresswoman Cori yeah. Bush, and Congresswoman Jen Kiggins. I think that's mm-hmm. how you say her name. But in 2015, we actually had six nurses who were serving in Congress. And then at the state level, and again, January 2023 statistics, we had about 68 nurse legislators. But in 2013, we had 97 nurse legislators. So obviously at the federal level, we've had like a 50% drop. And at the state level, we've had a 30% decrease. So why do you think we have such a decrease? And what factors do you think really have played a role in this decrease as far as nurses being visible in advocacy at such a high level?
So it is not easy to be involved in politics right now. And the divisiveness that we see within the political sphere, I can imagine it's challenging for clinicians like ourselves to be willing to put ourselves within that fray. I think it's worth it because nurses are one of the most trusted, most trusted profession. Every time they survey it, we are the yeah. most trusted profession.
How many years has that been now?
Excessive. I don't even know.
Double digits at this point.
Yeah. Yeah.
maybe triple.
Really, honestly, we are. And probably who is the least trusted profession? Most likely a politician, right? But how mm-hmm. can we lend our trusted voices to policy? How can we lend our background, our skill set into policy and to be able to really move things forward? That's what's really exciting to me. But with the divisiveness that we find in politics today, it is more challenging to be able to encourage people to run, and particularly right. to encourage women to run. And as we know, we are still a majority woman profession mm-hmm. because the standards for women in politics is different than it is for men. We just have to acknowledge that. And it can be a whole lot more challenging for women to run in terms of the environment that we are in right now. But I still think it's worth it. I still think it's important because we have such an important skill set to bring to the table to really try to bridge that divide. We're used to doing that. We're used to having those difficult conversations. And so the skill set nurses bring to the table is just invaluable.
Right. So as we're looking at this decline, kind of talking through it a little bit, we know that there are obstacles. We're mentioning those obstacles. And I think it's really important for those who are really starting their journey to know kind of what to expect and maybe even how to break through some of those barriers. So can you share some obstacles that you have faced or that you can see that in the future you're going to have to face and ways to break through some of the barriers that you've been able to break through?
So I would say when I ran for assembly, it was a huge challenge because I was flipping a district and received mm-hmm. threats when I ran for office. And that was an enormous obstacle for me to really sit back and think about, okay, I am doing this for what I consider to be the right reasons, but it comes with all sorts of other issues that can affect myself, my family, my kids. I have two kids at home. But for me, I didn't want to live in an environment where I didn't do something out of fear. And so it was really important to me to not give in to that and to realize that 90% of people, 99% of people are really, really good. And that we honestly agree on so much more than we disagree on. I happen to live in Waukesha County in Wisconsin, and it is a ruby red county. So if I didn't have Republican friends, I wouldn't have very many friends. And so again, I'm used to having those conversations, and I realize that there is so much more that unites us than divides us. And we cannot pay attention to a very loud minority who are creating this level of divisiveness. So that's really where I came from, is to get over that and to be able to know that I live in this community, I am part of this community, and I have enormous supporters in this community who are not going to allow that type of behavior to continue. But it is a challenge. So very few, we still have not achieved parity with women in politics. When I was in the assembly, actually, though, our Democratic caucus was majority women. Not the case on the Republican side. So we looked at it overall, it was about 2/3 men, 1/3 women. But in the Democratic caucus, which is smaller, we were majority women. Right now, the minority leader for the Democrats in the Assembly and the Senate within Wisconsin are both women and have been women. And so that was a really good place for me to be, to have some mentorship of what this looked like. And to see that women belong in these spaces, because we bring perspectives that nobody else is going to bring to the table.
Absolutely. So you really have kind of those two things going for you that are barriers, I think. And that is obviously female, because it is hard for females to really break into politics. But then also as a nurse, it's not a typical role that you see when you think of advocacy at the state and federal level. For me, I know I always look at those who have gone through the legal professions, you know, that's usually who I see there, or, you know, top businessmen who've moved their way up there. But you don't see a lot of nurses, and you don't see a lot of women. So that's definitely two obstacles that you had to overcome. Are there any other obstacles that...
You know, I think, so there's a statistic out there, and it's really interesting, that says that oftentimes, and this is, again, within men and women, and again, we're a vast majority female profession, men often self-select to run for politics. They often say, yep, I have the skills to do it. I can do it. I really feel like I can. And
I know where you're going with this. I've seen this. Keep going. This is good.
Women need to be asked to run.
Yes.
And they need to be asked an average of 6 times to say yes.
Yes.
Which makes me laugh. So, and I when I talk to nurses, and they say, well, I can't do what you're doing, Sarah. I was never an executive at a healthcare system. Mm-hmm. I didn't do the, and I was like, what you bring to the table is enough. It's enough. Your perspectives are enough. And you bring a valuable perspective. You don't need to have been an executive like me. You don't need to have multiple master's degrees. You don't need to have any of that. What you bring to the table is such an invaluable perspective that it needs to be talked about, because other folks are not going to be able to have that same perspective as a nurse, as a woman, juggling childcare, juggling these other things. Those are the kind of things that you want to make sure you're talking about. And what that looks like for the state of Wisconsin, what that looks like for folks who are, you know, living all across the state, trying to juggle all of these different things at the same time.
I want to throw another study that's out there into this, because I think it's really important too. And that is a study between men and women. And it showed that men were more likely to apply for jobs and roles that they weren't actually 100% qualified for.
Right.
And women were more likely to read through that job description and disqualify ourselves And then we never apply for the role. So we would never know if we could do the job. So
right.
I think that's huge that yeah, we need to start saying, you know what? I can do this.
Yeah.
I can do it.
You can
do it.
We need everybody. That's the thing. If all we have are lawyers who are politicians, you're going to get a very legal perspective. Mm-hmm. If all we have are business people who are politicians, you're going to get the perspective of a business owner. So mm-hmm. if you want to have a perspective as a nurse, as a mom, as a community member, then you mm-hmm. need to run for office because nobody else is going to be talking about the things that are important to you. And so that's why it's so critical for nurses to run for office and for women in general to run for office.
Absolutely. Can you share some examples from your experience that really highlight the impact nurses can have on shaping healthcare policies?
Absolutely. So a couple of the areas that I worked on when I was in the assembly is I was the author on the Medicaid expansion bill. And mm-hmm. we put it out there every year and it doesn't get a hearing, but it is really important for us to continue to push this type of legislation forward. And when I'm talking about these things, I can give those examples. I can say, this is what's happening out there in the world because I've seen it as a clinician. Mm-hmm. And so that's a way that we can do things as nurses, as clinicians, to be able to highlight the impact of what we right. either do or do not pass as legislation. The other issue that often will come up is sometimes, I was on the health committee, and sometimes they like to legislate how healthcare is delivered. Mm-hmm. Whether that is restrictions on the type of healthcare that's delivered. And we are, as nurses, we are scientists, right?
Yeah.
And some of the questions I would ask within those committee meetings is, where's the evidence that you have that what mm-hmm. you're proposing is evidence-based? Where are you getting this information from? What type of studies are you looking at? Are these randomized controlled trials? Are these something?
Opinions. Are they opinions?
Are these opinions? Like, but you're trying to legislate how doctors or nurse practitioners take care of patients. You better have the data and the information behind it to be able to, you know, solidify your position here. And oftentimes those questions would go unanswered. They didn't even have an idea of what I was talking about. And so then I had to explain to them, look, this is how clinicians make decisions. We make decisions based on evidence. We make decisions based on data. And what you're trying to propose here as legislation seems to have no basis in data. And so you're asking clinicians to put patients at risk with no evidence. And so that's the kind of conversations that I would have mm-hmm. with people who are testifying, trying to change a medical protocols without any sort of evidence. And the other things that often would happen is people really don't understand basic biology, which is sad to me in general. But that's, again, something that nurses can bring to the table. Like, this is not how the body works. And what you are proposing is just doesn't make any sense in terms of clinically, biologically, mm-hmm. these types mm-hmm. of things. And so you can bring those opinions to the table, not opinions, those perspectives to the table and really try
and
to push
facts,
data.
Where to find the facts and
right.
data.
What
yes.
is an appropriate resource to be able to find this information?
Right.
We know that as clinicians, we know that as nurses, we know that as scientists. And so that's the kind of thing that I was able to do on the health committee is to bring some of those things forward. I would just come with things. Well, this is from JAMA. This is from New England Journal of Medicine. Here's another, article that is saying quite different than what you've got there.
Right.
How do we square this here? How do we make sense of these two different pieces of information? Yours is an opinion article. Mine comes from a scientific journal. What uh-huh. levels of evidence do you think should carry more weight when we're having this conversation?
Absolutely. That's so good. So what do you consider is the most impactful aspect of nurses in advocating for positive change? Most impactful?
So, the most impactful thing we bring to the table is, yes, we're scientists. Yes, we have data. Uh-huh. But we are also, we are so involved with our patients. And we have those stories because at the end of the day, politicians
are
people.
Oh, you're going to make me cry.
I know.
The stories. When you talk about the stories, we all have stories.
We do. And politicians are people. They're people, yeah. Right? And they are able to be swayed as well with those stories. And so, yes, have your data, have your information, make sure you're coming with the right pieces. But at the end of the day, if you want to be able to convince somebody who may not be really necessarily thinking that they want to agree with you, providing them stories of the impact of their policies is just so important. And we have
faces.
Faces,
you're
people,
making it
humans.
Real, personal.
That's what we can do. That is the hugest impact that nurses have. And there's a lot of us. That's the other thing. We are the largest healthcare provider, the largest healthcare provider workforce. There is a lot of us. And so if we band together, if we really do our best to advocate for our patients, for our communities, we have enormous power to make change. But we have to band together to be able to do that.
Absolutely. So good. I think this is a perfect place to end episode one. We are at the end of our time for episode one. Please join me and Lieutenant Governor Rodriguez as we continue this discussion in episode two.
This podcast featured content from an accredited CE activity provided by Calibri Healthcare. Visit elitelearning.com/podcasts for accreditation and disclosure statements and instructions on how you may be able to earn CE credits. Take your learning to the next level by subscribing to more podcasts on compelling healthcare topics.